Hey, everybody. Hello and welcome back, all the listeners out there. This is Jared, your host of the Attitude Series podcast. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Our next guest has spent over 22 years educating, learning, and sharing his passion as a wildlife and nature photographer with people all over Australia and the world. Born in former Yugoslavia, raised in the western suburbs of Sydney, and now he resides in beautiful Queensland. I'm excited to introduce episode number 5, Mr. Michael Snedek. Hi, this is Jared. I'm your host of the Attitude Series podcast. And before we get started, this is going to be episode number 5. I just want to give a big shout out to Jess Venels. She's actually behind the camera right now somewhere.
Hey, Jess.
Hey, Jess. Hey. Yeah, Jess is the one that comes together and she puts all this stuff into the editing process, the final production process. So we're excited to have Jess here. Jess does a tremendous job. And if I don't give a thank you to Jess, then, you know, we're going to be lost in the process. So thank you, Jess.
Well done.
All right. So today on episode 5 here at the Attitude Series, super excited. I'm always excited about the guests that we have here, but I've got a list of, I've got a list so long about this particular man, and I'll just start right here before we totally welcome into it. But his name is Michael Snedek, and he is a professional wildlife, nature, and travel photographer and proprietor of Wild Nature Photo Expeditions. And when we talk about expeditions, we'll probably hear a little bit about some of the stories that he's been on, some fascinating stuff. He's one of Australia's most accomplished and published wildlife nature photographers, his images having been published across Australia and the globe in hundreds of publications. And Michael's also won many awards for his photography and has written numerous magazine articles. He's actually also published 2 books as well. Is that right?
That's right.
And on top of that, he's honored to be a Nikon school tutor as well. He's done a lot of public speaking. He's a sought-after speaker, and there's not enough that I couldn't say. We just need to dive into it, so I'm very excited to have Michael here on the podcast today. So welcome, Michael Snedek.
Thank you.
Hey,
thanks. It's great to be here, Jared. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
How has your morning been, Michael?
Fantastic. Nice and relaxing, getting ready, and lots to talk about, so let's dive into it. Really great.
One of the things I like to do when we get started is just to back it up a little bit, because I think that you've been doing, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been doing photography and all this for over 22 years now?
Yes, absolutely.
So prior to, you know, your passion turning into this, give me a little background. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you grow up?
So I was actually born in Slovenia, which was a part of Yugoslavia.
Right.
And my mum and dad grew up in the base of the Alps in Slovenia. And so I was 3 years old. So in January this year was the 50th anniversary of my life here in Australia.
Wow.
So we came to Australia in 1969. And basically, Sydney. I grew up in Sydney. And then ventured to Mullumbimby near Byron Bay.
Okay.
Ran a business there. And then ended up at O'Reilly's Rainforest Retreat, which is basically a World Heritage place up in the mountains in the Gold Coast hinterland.
Yep.
And now been living in Brisbane for about 15 years and have just moved in the last fortnight to a lovely pole home in the forest.
Wow.
My dream home. And so it's great. So, so happy.
That's exciting stuff. Now, when you said Slovenia, you just shot me back a few years. I had traveled to Slovenia years ago to a place called Ljubljana.
Yes.
You probably know where that's at.
I was there, hadn't been there in 30 plus years. I was there only end of last year with my wife and trekked around a bit around Europe and a lovely part of the world.
Very beautiful part.
Yes.
Now, do you still have family over there?
Oh, a few distant relos, but really not many. There's only my mum and dad in the Blue Mountains, my brother in Sydney, a couple of cousins and an auntie here, and a few long lost relatives, but don't really keep in touch.
Okay. All right. So from Sydney, now you're up here in Queensland. You got a, you know, 2 weeks ago, you said you just moved into a...
Two weeks into a pole home in the forest up near Ironbark Reserve, which is a a place on, in the northwest Brisbane, right near the forest where I do a bit of running and my wife and I walk and run. It's brilliant. And yesterday we had a koala in our backyard, our tree. Yeah, kind of pretty stoked.
See, now people like that that want to come to Australia, or even for some Australians have never seen one, that's pretty amazing. Now, for some of the other people out there, if you could describe this pole home, the actual home, was this something you had built? Was it created already there?
No, we'd spent many, many months looking, and it was quite a long haul, and then this place came up, and we worked pretty hard to get it off the market. We call it open home. The following day, lots of people came along, but we looked at the house at 11 a.m., and we had bought it that afternoon at 3 p.m. It was just our dream home. Fantastic. It's a pole home. It's set in the forest. There's birds everywhere. There's it's breezes and fresh air. And at this ripe old age, I'm finally living somewhere where it's my dream home. Yeah. We're really both happy, very, very happy.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. When you were driving up here today through Chapel Hill,
yes,
you obviously know it's a pretty leafy area.
Yep.
Have you ever done any photo shoots or anything up here in this way?
Not up here, no. But I've photographed a lot in Brisbane Forest Park, and which are areas around here within 10-minute drive from here.
Yep.
I've done quite a bit of shooting, and I love it. And as you know, we've had drought for months, the worst in decades. In the last few days, it's been fantastic. All the rain, everything's lush. Creeks are running, animals, birds are singing, it's back.
It's
my
great.
Tanks are filled at home. It's all really good, yeah.
It's love great. It. And, you know, like the last couple of days, I've actually been around Mount Cutha. I've seen the streams, so I know what you're talking about. We've got the little streams and the crossings. And
we were there yesterday walking. My wife and I, Dina and I, were hiking at Cutha yesterday morning. So
it's beautiful.
It is.
It's beautiful.
Fantastic.
So let's dive into some of this good stuff, because I can think about, you know, not just, I mean, first of all, you're a professional photographer.
Yes.
How do you become a professional photographer?
For me, I was really fortunate. A lot of people will go through, they'll do college degrees or you know, associate diplomas in photography. Whereas about nearly 23 years ago, I met an incredible guy called Glenn Trolfo, who's one of Australia's top and most renowned wildlife photographers and nature documentary makers. And he became my mentor. There's no college on earth that could have given me what I learned from him. But I was the one who lugged the gear, who built the hides, the towers, trekked through the mud, all voluntarily, I might add. And I had the best apprenticeship that anyone could get. It was just incredible. And I did it for no other reason, but just for the love of being out in nature, learning photography, no aspirations to make this my business whatsoever.
Right.
Just the love of, I love nature, I love wildlife, I love the environment. I'm passionate about conservation. And here was this mad, crazy, wonderful guy that I just was drawn to, him to me. And we would, you know, he's, I think, 73. So he's, I always know he's, I'm 53, he's 73.
Right.
And back then he was willing to just give all and help me out. And it was incredible. What I experienced was remarkable.
So you and Glenn, you guys are still closely tied. And
still friends. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Now, have you decided during that same time, or like since then, have you taken on some mentees yourself? Have you taken on people in such a way to pay it forward?
I have. Yeah, absolutely. There's a number of people that I've been helping out, people that are struggling, people that try so very, very hard. They may not have income to pay for workshops, and I have taken them on board because I remember what that was like. I remember that incredible feeling, thinking, wow, this guy is willing to help me as much as I was doing the, you know, the hard yakka, as we call it.
Yep.
And I'm doing the same, definitely.
Yeah. That's great. One of our previous episodes that we had, fellow by the name of Tom Law was talking about the fitness industry and how people, we've got a lot of people in the fitness industry and, you know, how they can best, you know, achieve some form of success is by being able to tag on to other people and do things for free to be able to get the experience. And it sounds like the same thing in the photography industry, where somebody's taken you under their wing, you've carried bags, you've done all that, you know, to learn the ropes, so to speak. So what are some of the great lessons you took away from Glenn?
Gosh, there's so many. And I guess patience, being a wildlife predominantly photographer, I photograph landscapes and macro, the little things in life.
You know what? But I noticed, I must say, because I've taken a look through your website.
Yes.
And I've seen the macro fungi, like
yes,
some amazing
specialty.
I was blown away by some of the detail of, like, even in Tasmania, like, yes. The Overland Track.
One of my favorite parts of Australia. We'll get back to that.
Yeah, okay. We'll do that. Keep going.
Wildlife in particular, though, is really more my speciality. And Glenn would always say patience no matter what. Just be patient. Don't expect straight away the results. Observe the animal. Watch them for a while before you pick up that camera. See what they do or they may do. Also, using whatever gear you have, it doesn't always matter about money. I'm a professional now and I have really top quality gear, but there are a lot of people out there, people I've been teaching for years, with the very basic gear, they can still take great photos.
Yeah, you did see my iPhone today, didn't you?
It was brilliant. Oh, yeah. It's the best. Yeah, it's
I've got some stuff I will show you a little bit later on. And hopefully it might blow you away, because I did pick up some photography equipment 25 years ago when I was at university.
So, right.
So that's great. So you picked up some great lessons from Glenn, and you guys still hold a great relationship as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Now some of the photography that you do is what I'm really amazed about is that it's not here just in Australia. Even though there's beautiful places in Australia, but you have jumped outside and you have gone to some of the, how do you say it? You've been to some of the extreme parts of the world.
Yes,
and
very
one
much.
Of the things that got me fascinated when I was looking through your information was the fact that you've traveled, you know, over to the Eastern Russia, over to the Arctics, and you've got a 15-day trip in particular that you do, which just sounds amazing for even an amateur or somebody like myself.
Yep.
Can you share some insight as to how that came about and you know, that trip, how often you do that?
Sure. It was pretty much a natural progression. Many, many years of running photo tours, everything from half-day workshops in around Brisbane, southeast Queensland, working interstate. And then I thought, well, this was years ago, hey, there are places out there. And so all over Africa, places like Kenya, Botswana, Namibia, Madagascar, Sabi Sabi, and then the Russian Arctic, as you mentioned. I'll get back to that in a sec. Svalbard, which is the Arctic north of Norway, in June this year. Coming in a few months, I'm up to my third trip there with guests.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Sub-Antarctic. I was in Antarctica only 3 weeks ago for my third tour. So there are a lot. India, I've been to the wilds of India, looking for tigers, amongst other things, and photographing. And I love to get out to places that are unusual, remote. And the whole idea is me being there and teaching people, organizing everything, but teaching people how to get the best shots. But the Russian Arctic, it just fascinated me. And there's only a couple of companies in the world that go to this particular location. We're off to what is known as Wrangel Island. They call it the polar bear den of the world.
Right.
So mums and cubs. And as luck would have it, they had to change ship about 3 months ago, the company. They've now got the world famous icebreaker, Kapitan Klebnikov. So we're going to break through the ice and go to places that most people have never been.
I saw that. It was a pretty cool. I mean, you know what? It's this big box on a boat.
Is.
It's a
it
big
is.
Box. It can house 100 guests plus,
that's right.
You know, yeah. And yeah. The captain. And what I thought was really cool about it was the fact that you've got a botanist. You've got all these specialists on there, from the doctors, the medics, the people that you need to have on there, like a little floating city. And this icebreaker can crush through 2 meter deep ice. Is that right?
It is. Yeah, it's quite renowned, and it's the one that's headed up to the North Pole. And the fact that we've got the icebreaker in areas where normally, of course, when the ice is there, you stop. Guess what? You can't go through. An icebreaker is designed specifically, and as soon as the ship changed, the few guests just bang, they found out straight on. I think I've got one place left, but that's in July, end of July this year, 2019, and really, really looking forward to it.
That's awesome.
And an amazing variety of wildlife, and a lot that are not found anywhere else.
Yeah, so, I was once again blown away. I was just sitting there thinking, as you go through that sea part, there's literally, it's only, what it says, 3 nautical miles between Russia and USA or Alaska.
That's right.
You know, and that's it. And just right up the pass, and you get some.
So 15 days. The food on board is brilliant. You've got, you mentioned others, you know, that are there, like the doctors and the botanists and the geologists and guides. You've got chefs that are some of the best. So we eat like kings and queens. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
a bit of a foodie, so I enjoy that.
So and how's your Russian?
Yeah, not very good. I know how to say cheers, na zdravje, that's about it.
Fair enough. Good stuff, good stuff. So all of this, obviously, when we take a look at it, you're 17 plus years as an expedition leader, which is really cool because you've got great articles out there on, you know, like you've learned as you've gone along the way, you know, how to deal with cold climates and harsh conditions.
Yep.
And if we take a look at some of the, not just photography, but, you know, being out there in the wild, where did some of this passion stem from?
It's an interesting story because being born in Slovenia, Mum and Dad tell the story. It's a really cool, short little story, but they lived at the base of the Alps in the most incredible, beautiful forest, and it would get to minus 20, 30 easily, really cold. And Mum would tell the story that as a little young boy, I'd sit in the corner with my lips sort of down, not happy. And Mum would know straight away. She'd get the gloves, jackets, beanie, and say, righto, Dad. And he'd put me on his shoulders. And as soon as he walked out that door, I'd be smiling, bang. And, you know, we're now talking 50 years later, and I'm the same. I love being outdoors. I work on the computer a lot because of my business. But after 2 to 3 hours, I have to get out. Yep. In the garden, I go for a walk, I'll go for a bike ride, even if it's just a 10-minute play in the yard. But I totally respect people that work indoors, that work computer programming. Brilliant. Everyone has to do jobs all around the world, and there are many people that are very passionate. But to me, you may as well put a straitjacket on me after a couple of days. I can't do it. I need to be out there. I feel closed in when I'm inside. Yep. I'm always looking for the outdoors, and that's why it led me to... You know, I was really broke and poor in the early days. It was really quite difficult. And I had a chance to do wedding photography, school sports photography, product, real estate. And all of those I said no to, even though I needed the money, because it was the nature, the environment, the wildlife I was passionate about. The interesting thing, Jared, was that people would say, and one friend in particular that I'm still friends with, and he said, you'll never make it in the nature wildlife photography. There's just not enough. What are you doing? You won't get enough business. And he's still doing a job that he sincerely hates. Living the dream.
Was that a little bit of motivation for you to go, I'm going to prove absolutely. You wrong?
Absolutely. And the work that I've done over the years, I mean, it's been incredibly long hours, late nights on the computer, virtually every night for years. My wife would go to bed and I would stay there. I worked 20 hours a week as a quarantine officer, Brisbane Airport. Yep. And then I did well over 40 plus on my business. The money was low, the long hours, the frustration's unbelievable. But I just kept at it. And to me, it was no matter what, I will succeed at this. And now I get told constantly, you've got no idea how lucky I am. And I'm on holidays again and it's still hard work, but I am living the dream. But let's add, you know, 20 years of hard work.
You know what? It's true. Hard work, and what you just said, luck. You know, luck is there too, but also a deep desire and passion, drive for what you're doing.
Yes.
And you were saying horticulture too. We've had a couple really good chats before we kicked this podcast off.
We did.
And one of the things that I was fascinated by is prior to even doing what you're currently doing, you were doing horticulture. You said something about an introduction where you're doing. You were associated with Dick Smith, in particular.
Yeah. So long, long time ago. So I did horticulture studies in Sydney.
Yep.
At the Ryde School of Horticulture, and I applied for a position and became Dick Smith's private gardener, both at his residence at home.
Yep.
And when he used to own Australian Geographic, the magazine, there were grounds, all native gardens and wildlife. And I became his horticulturist. Yeah, correct. And a fascinating guy. I would see Dick behind the scenes, just in the very, you know, casual mode.
Yeah.
And he'd have, you know, many a chat with me, and he was very, very inspiring. And I took some of those comments and ideas into my life in business, and it's been fantastic.
It's great because you never know where direction in life is going to take you.
Exactly.
You know, so all those people that you meet, I always hear my dad is always in the background. He's always saying and connecting the dots.
Yeah.
He's like, just keep connecting the dots. You never know what's going to happen. It's all about connecting those dots. And so that's great. And I guess Dick Smith probably would have influenced you in a lot of ways because of him being a great businessman, but also because of the job that you were doing, which could have led you further down the path where you're at today.
It was more, no, I totally agree, but things like he would say that if you get knocked down, you just get back up again, you dust yourself off no matter what. And he said, there's always one person, I remember this clearly, he said, there's one person that is absolutely going to, you know, let you down the most. There's always one person, and that'll be the person that'll be like the thorn in your side. And of course, me, thinking initially, oh, is it your competitor? And he's like, no, Michael, it's you. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, if you, you know, you get knocked down and you stay there, you've just got to get up. He had the early years of Dick Smith Electronics.
Right.
I know the story well. He got knocked down well and truly, but he got back up again, and the rest is history. One of our most successful businessmen, entrepreneurs, adventurers.
Very true.
Great advice. And he seemed a bit impatient when he was telling you, because to him it was so natural. And I'm this young guy, this novice, but I always remember that, thinking, yep, absolutely. It really is. Believe in yourself, get back up, just move forward with the hard work I mentioned, and boy, oh boy, you can achieve dreams are possible, really.
That's a very great, that's a great story, and it's a cool connection that you can share with other people. And when you talk about getting knocked down, prior to us kicking off here today, there was a, you know, we actually share a common trait in terms of we like running, we like trails, we like nature and all that.
Yes.
And I know that you run with a running crew up on the north side of Brisbane. And running was something that wasn't always in the background, but it happened. And there was a reason that you got to becoming into the trail running and all that. Is that something that you want to share with all of us?
Quite happy.
Yep.
So I've been married to Dina, my wife, for we've been together 17 years, and she was always a mad, crazy, fitness freak runner. And I was the husband or the support crew at the big events. And then about 3 years ago, I was struck down with an illness, and it was undiagnosed. So it was an incredible physical and mental nightmare. So depression, anxiety, blurry vision, not sleeping well, body going hot and cold. It was just an absolute nightmare, not knowing what the scenario was and what was wrong. And my GP would say, well, you need to go and see a counsellor or go and do yoga or meditation, and it made no difference whatsoever. And this is one of those stories where luck does come into it. Luck is certainly something that, you know, doesn't come into it a lot. But luck, I was in the surgery and he wasn't available. And they said, would you like to see another GP? Which I did. And she diagnosed me quite quickly with a pituitary tumour at the base of the brain. And the way to get back on the feet, to get you on medication, one tablet once a week, but they said it would take 6 to 8 weeks to get back. It's no quick fix.
Right.
And they diagnosed me something called diazepam, Valium, which I didn't even know what it was. But I thought, no, I can't do this. And I took up running as a way to get some happy cells, endorphins, and it was remarkable. And here I am as a non-runner. I hadn't run in 35 years. I was a hiker, rode bikes, and then I started running at the ripe old age of 50, and it was 6 kilometres of running. I thought I was going to die at the end of it. My running coach and friend, she still laughs at that, seeing me doubled over at the end, and now I'm running half marathons, and, you know, it's amazing. And I've got a social group of friends. It's incredibly good physically, mentally. It's brilliant. I'm loving it.
And so you're on a different path then right now.
Completely. Completely. Very positive. I don't sweat the small things.
Yeah.
And I can assure you I have a lot of gratitude for life. And, you know, I see some people will be incredibly negative, and I tend to just kind of steer away. I don't, you know, that really negative, nasty, I don't want to know. I like to be surrounded by positive people. And sure, somebody might need help. Somebody's down. That's different to somebody who's just negative. And life is great. I mentioned we've moved into this wonderful home. I'm about to head next Sunday, in a week, up to O'Reilly's, where I started my career, where I met my wife Dina, up to Lamington National Park, running a week-long tour. I'm off to Tasmania, one of my favourite places, Cradle Mountain.
Busy. That's why we couldn't get you here last week.
Correct.
And that's why we probably couldn't even get you here at 9 o'clock this morning, because you're just busy. Your schedule's packed with all kinds of good stuff. Thank you for sharing that. So obviously on the up and up, and well, it's nothing worse than a misdiagnosis, right?
My one bit of advice, for what it's worth, is to get a second opinion.
Yeah.
If you're struggling out there, get a second opinion. But also, I had friends that were there, you know, friends that really helped me through the low times, and it's so important. Talk about it. I'm not being sexist here in any way, but guys in particular don't often share stuff. And, you know, for guys, I really think, get out there, talk to your mates. Whether it's a coffee or a beer or a run, talk about it, be open. And it makes such a difference. It
Michael,
really does.
You hit the nail on the head. It does. Mm. It does make a difference, because when people are down and out, they need to share that. And there's value in becoming vulnerable, instead of, you know, it's not going to affect me. Doesn't affect me. You know,
putting that tough exterior up and saying, oh, I'm a bloke, I'm not meant to share it. But deep down, you're dying a death inside.
Yeah.
And I found there's one or two people out there that kind of disappeared off the scene. They couldn't handle the down and out Michael, and the others that have stuck with me. I mean, friends for decades, and we continue to be, and it's strengthened our friendship. And there's a couple of people out there who are struggling that I've kind of taken on board, and I'm helping because I know what it's like being there, and they need friends. People.
Absolutely.
So,
well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
When you're just talking about Lamington National Park,
yes,
O'Reilly's, can you share a little bit about that? Because I think David Attenborough was somewhere in the picture at the time.
He was. So my mentor, Glenn Trelfo, that I mentioned, he was actually commissioned to help David Attenborough. It's a long time ago. It was November 1999.
Right.
And he was commissioned to help find bowerbirds. These are a particular type of bird. And David Attenborough was doing a documentary on bowerbirds of Australia and New Guinea.
Now, do they have a particular noise that these birds make?
They do, but I can't mimic it.
You can't mimic
No, I'm sorry.
I thought maybe you'd be able to get one of those.
That's one skill that you're not going to get from me, Jared.
Is it something that, just for the people listening, because I think they're pretty cool birds, it's almost like them shooting a noise to another direction? It's like
that's the whip bird.
The whip bird. Okay,
yes.
We'll see. I don't know my birds then.
That's okay. The satin bowerbird does this. It's like a mechanical sound. And it goes over and over, and the male, he's there all in full color. He's basically trying to attract the girls.
Right.
So he builds a bower. So this thing on the ground, it's not a nest, it's a bower made of grass and sticks, or stems.
Yeah.
And then he adorns it with all bits of blue. This is the satin bowerbird, for example. And then he'll look around and look for the ladies, and he picks up a flower. He's really romantic. He picks up a flower. And then he does this jive, and he gets the feathers down, and he's dancing away. And the girls come down. And I always said to people, like, there'll be one or two or three. And it's like these shows. I don't watch them, but, you know, the Dancing with the Stars or whatever. 7 out of 10, you know, 9 out. And then there's a 10 out of 10. She likes what he's doing. So then she'll come down, and she will watch. And he's got to keep dancing. And he will only mate with her when she goes through the bower. And then she goes through the bower, he mates with her. That's the whole reason he's doing this, to mate with the girls. She then flies off, builds a nest, lays the eggs, incubates, rears the chicks, does all the hard work. And he's the playboy, man. He just dances and mates. And it's kind of like, yeah, okay. But then the emu does the hard work. She just lays the eggs, and he's got to sit on them, raise the chicks. So there is a quality in the bird world.
Well, there you go. That's great. That's great. So Glenn was at the time, back in 1999, you were working with Glenn. This is Lamington. And somehow David Attenborough came in the picture.
Yes, back to Attenborough. We got sidetracked.
No, that's all right. I love the story. You David just shared something I didn't know.
Sure. So he was working on this documentary, and David Attenborough's assistant came up and said to me, look, we haven't got a budget for you, but would you like to assist? And of course, I got to work with him for a couple of weeks. And here's somebody that is so unbelievably well-known, famous, revered, who was so humble, who wanted to know my story. His drink of the day, his one little vice was gin on ice at the end of the day. And he'd invite me and others in to sit and ask me, who's it really a nobody in the world of, you know, this David Attenborough. He was a lovely guy. The staff told me, even with a bad hip that he had, he'd always carry his bags. He'd never want help. He would constantly be asked for autographs. Did it with a smile, an amazing guy. It was just an incredible opportunity. And I was the only one on, we called it on the mountain at Lamington, that had a David Attenborough book, Life of Birds.
Right.
And I have this wonderful thing where he wrote, "Dear Michael, wishing you the best with your photography career. Thanks for your help, David Attenborough." And very treasured. It's hidden. So no one sees it.
And the rest is history, because that's where you are today.
Yes.
Yeah. Taking a look at through some of your work, which is phenomenal for anybody, and we'll end up putting in the show notes how people can reach you and contact you and all
Thank
that
you.
As well. I saw a couple different things in your articles.
Yep.
Is get it right in camera.
Yes.
Get it right in camera. Where did you learn that? And can you explain what that means?
Of course. Very much from Glenn, my mentor originally. Get it right in camera basically means do as much as you can. Learn the settings. Learn the techniques. Get the exposure, the composition. Get it right in camera. Rather, with the advent of digital many years ago, and there is so much out there with photoshopping, cloning, and where people just take shots and say, it doesn't matter if it's not too good because I can fix it in Photoshop. To me, that's absolutely not the way that I teach. My whole mantra has been to work hard, to learn the techniques, to learn all those settings, and literally the shot is there, and then you do minimal work, you've already got it there. You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Yeah, I saw that. That was great.
Yep. And the other thing is, for me, I spend so much time on the computer because I run a business. It's something I have to do, not that I love. Why would I spend more time on the computer when I can be out in nature? And that's how I teach. And lately, there's been some real issues in the photography world where there are people that have been caught out cheating. No names mentioned whatsoever, but it's been out there. It's a massive thing. In competitions and how they're doing things and manipulating and getting caught out. From the very beginning, my whole thing has been get it right in camera. And especially with wildlife photography, a lot of the competitions want to see what you took. You're not allowed to clone. You can't. Cloning is where you put different backgrounds in.
Right.
And that's the way I continue to teach, and I enjoy that particular process.
That is awesome. That's interesting too, because we have so much. We've got so much. We have so much at our fingertips. When you talk about all these different filters, and you talk about apps, and you talk about Photoshop, and you talk about, you know, I could pick up my phone on Instagram, and I could put a billion different things together, or I could put things in the background. Instead of having the real true photo. And it made me think about business. And if it's just get it right in camera, it also means like get it right into the basics. Yep. So in business, it's like if you're a salesperson, get it right in the basics, you know, like how to engage with somebody, what questions to ask, you know, needs and all this. So that sounds like a very transferable thing. And another topic that you just said was that people are cheating. Well, that's something that you've done, right? You've not cheated.
Not cheating, I was about to say.
But you've been a judge, a competitive judge, for 3 years with
the Nature Conservancy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Very much so. And I should add, though, very, very importantly, there's nothing wrong with being creative, with adding all these things. Nothing wrong with it. There are many, many programs out there, like you said, Instagram and goodness, there's nothing wrong with that. It's actually fun. It's creative. There are sections in photo comps called creative visions where you can go crazy. I guess I'm referring to photo comps where you're meant to be true to what you took a photo of.
Right.
That's where I'm saying get it right. But when it comes to being creative, having fun, using filters, go for it. If you just want to do that for fun, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
In the business side of things, though, very much so, it's you can do all the PR that you want. But really, it's all about being decent, upfront, you know, the right pricing, the conditions that you put out there, being on time, being reliable, being friendly, giving people money's worth. And I'm very fortunate. A lot of my business is word of mouth, and I have a lot of repeaters. It's a pretty cool thing. A lot of people come back, tell their friends. I don't do a lot of paid advertising, and I've worked hard at it, but it's great. I have followers that follow me everywhere, all around the world, around Australia, that keep coming back, and I'm pretty happy about
that. It shows. All anybody has to do is just take a look at your website. They just have to look at that. They can take a look at your work. They can see that you've put a lifetime into becoming the professional photographer that you are today, and some of the stuff that you've created.
And I look forward to the future, because there's so many great things. You don't rest on your laurels. You keep going. You keep trying new things, achieving. And I'm looking at the moment at new tours, new workshops, and then keeping the favorites there as well. And my biggest problem, I say with a smile here, is having enough time in the year to do everything, because at the same time, balance is incredibly important. After getting ill 3 years ago, I learned that balance, having time out, stopping at a certain point and not answering your mobile 24 hours a day, which I used to any time.
Right.
You know, after dinner, that's it. I shut shop. I watch Netflix and movies. I never used to do it. You know, I'm reading more books. I'm going running. I'm balancing life a lot more. And that then means that in my business, I can also be more positive, more energetic, and it's great. But it's taken a lot of tweaking. But I mean, I'm in a good place.
It sounds like it. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, if you keep evolving, that's the best part. You just keep evolving with it. So for our future photographers out there, amateur photographers who are wanting to become professional photographers, or for people that are wanting to get into some of the classes, what is some of the best advice that you could give an amateur photographer who wants to pursue their passion in the field?
Best advice: don't get frustrated when things don't go right. There are many, many, many occasions. I mean, I could go hundreds and hundreds of different scenarios over the years with people. It's like I need to be part counselor when I run workshops, because people get down, they get dejected, they get frustrated. They're so passionate, a lot of them, and enthusiastic. But don't get frustrated. Just keep at it. Keep practicing. Enter photo competitions. So you're basically getting feedback on your images. There are a million websites and groups out there and Facebook groups, and goodness knows, pick ones and join them and get involved.
That's one of your portraits outside. I can hear it right now.
Yes, that's right. I'm looking at it. You can't see it.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Happy after all the rain.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So, well, I tell you what we're going to do, Michael. We're going to wrap this thing up. But before we do, I just want you to, if people want to get in contact with you.
Yes.
What is the best way for them to reach out to you, contact you, to talk about your expeditions, to talk about your tutoring with photography classes? How can people reach you?
So basically, I have quite an in-depth website.
Yeah.
Would you like me to give the website
details? Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's www.wildnaturephotoexpeditions, .com. You said that you would be putting the details at the end.
We'll stick it all in our show notes.
If they want to email me, it's info@wildnaturephotoexpeditions.com. I'm more than happy to talk to people, for people to have a look, research. They can contact me. There's a contact form on the website as well. And it's not just the big Antarctica, Russian Arctic tours that I do. I do everything from 3-4 hour macro workshops here in Brisbane, the Mount Coot-tha Botanic Gardens. I do a wildlife workshop at Australia Zoo, which is up at Biwa towards the Sunshine Coast. I do local 2-3 hour city lights in Brisbane.
Yep.
So small workshops, O'Reilly's I mentioned, 5 days, right through to different ones around Australia and around the world. So I try to balance it out. I have a newsletter once a month. People are willing to, able to subscribe to a free newsletter once a month that I release as well. Details on the website.
Excellent.
And lots of articles. I've probably written 60 plus articles, which are all as PDFs, all free, that people can read as well.
Fantastic.
So there's just a few ways.
I love it. So, I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but I just, you know, I want to. Do you like antiquities? Do you like old photograph?
I do.
Old.
What have you got for me?
I just want to show you something. I'm going to find out if you know what it is. Have you ever seen one of these? For the camera.
Goodness me.
And I'll just give you a little insight. This is actually in Russian.
Yes.
Language.
It is.
You've seen film like that?
Not at all. This
is
amazing.
You want to see the camera that it goes into?
I would love to.
Maybe you can tell me a little bit more about this camera.
Are you kidding me?
Have you seen this camera before?
No, I haven't. No.
Do you know much about this camera?
Nope, not at all.
This is
Please, this is your turn.
Yeah. This is actually purchased for $400 in an antique shop in New Zealand. And I believe the Russians made these. And they only made about 200 of them. And they sold them to the Afghanis during the Cold War. And this was a spy camera.
You're kidding me. Without
a battery, you wind it up. And they could literally take pictures
of
documentation to be able to take back. You open up the bottom, and it's in Russian, and it even says Zakrit, which, just to show you, this is interesting stuff. I just thought, man, I've never seen anybody that would be, check this out.
That is incredible. Wow, that is really amazing. How did you know about this? Did you know, or did you walk in and then just suddenly went, this looks like a pretty cool camera?
I was in New Zealand. I was actually in Queenstown. I've always had a fascination with Russian.
Yes.
I took Russian for 7 years.
Oh, fantastic.
But yeah, I just thought, you know what? I've got you coming here today. This thing normally sits in a cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it might be something you'd be like, wow, that is pretty fascinating. I've never seen one of those before.
No, I most certainly haven't.
Well, there you go.
Brilliant.
Michael Snedek, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jiro. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being here. All right.
You're welcome. Thank you.